You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Another episode of Find the Call is here. Today's episode features a conversation with Trevor of the band Sundress. Sundress recently released Home Remedy via Brood Records, their most collaborative record to date with a solidified lineup and a sound to go along with it. Our chat hits on the album, finding the right producer and label, connecting with fans during the pandemic, and a whole lot more. How does it feel to have the album out now?
It feels really, really good. It was something that it took a long time to make and a long time to make happen. And there were times that we felt like we wouldn't maybe get to this point. So despite the whole world shutting down and music and touring not being a thing, we still managed to finally get the record out. So it's a good feeling. And I feel like it's the first time we've had any kind of audience anticipating a release, so that was kind of fun to actually see people excited for it as the singles were coming out. So it's definitely been a beacon of light in these dark times for the band, for sure.
I feel like I've seen you kind of being more interactive with your and creative with your Twitch stuff than a lot of the other bands that I've seen doing stuff. Can you tell me a little bit about kind of some of the stuff you've been doing and how those ideas came together?
Yeah, totally. I'm definitely lucky in the sense that I have a good friend who's he does a lot of his own Twitch streaming, and he's very experienced in producing high quality content through Twitch, and he was able to kind of produce and steer us the right way. But I wanted to, especially for the month that the record was coming out, I wanted to do some different shows just to keep people coming back, because I found myself looking at some other bands' live streams, and when it was just one guy with a guitar, it was cool, but I'd find myself getting bored after a while, I suppose that could totally depend on the artist, because I could listen to Phoebe Bridgers play guitar and sing for hours on end.
Well, you said a guy with a guitar, so.
Oh, fair. but yeah, so I just thought it'd be cool to make the episode's themed and work on some pre-recorded content that we could cut into. So it was almost like it was me on the screen with a guitar, but I was kind of narrating it and having extra stuff to show in between, just to and when we'd one thing we did is we did one that was the history of the band, and we had all the band members hop on a Zoom call prior to this Twitch, and we recorded us basically reacting to all the super old songs and music videos, and then edited it together into a little 10-minute video. So it's kind of a cool thing to share. And then while that's going on, we can get in on the comment section on Twitch and stuff and interact a little more. So all that stuff I'm happy to be getting to do it. And it's something that I'll think that we'll continue doing even once we can tour again, so that's one cool thing. We also have a Discord server.
Oh, nice. I didn't know about that. How's that? How did that kind of come together?
It was actually on a couple of our Twitch streams. People were just suggesting it, and I've never been a gamer, and I wasn't really familiar with the platform, but again, my friend Andy helped explain and set it up for us, and it's such a cool way to I think we only have 30 or so members on it, but it's those 30 people are the ones that really love the band, So to give them that kind of extra, it's just a cool place you can go hang out, and it doesn't have to be some official thing. And, we're enjoying it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, how has it kind of been breaking down those barriers between the band and the fans? Is that something that's kind of always been, a goal for you? Or is that kind of something that's kind of, come more out of necessity for trying to find new ways to promote during this pandemic?
I would say it's always been a goal to just connect with fans as much as possible. It was hard for me at first because I I have a lot of anxiety and social anxiety, and but I found when, like about like a year or two ago, I decided to start just being a little bit more open on stage with like what I've been through and kind of just letting people know my struggles and that I'm a person, because you never know who that might help, you know. And we found that to kind of like just engage a lot more thoughtful conversations after the show, and like really just like basically as an artist now, if you have fans, you're kind of almost expected to give them a like a inside look at your life with social media now. And so to be able to connect with people on things that mean a lot to me, I feel like it's grown our, maybe not given us a bigger fan base, but it's made the fan base that we have a lot stronger.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I've seen you kind of like talk about how, you know, how like destigmatizing like mental health issues and sharing your experiences in order to help, you know, kind of others realize that they're not alone in what they're feeling. How that was kind of like a goal for this album. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and about that kind of like change that you mentioned in the mindset?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like my songwriting's always been really autobiographical, and the first record, I feel like I was, you know, I had overcome a lot. I used to be addicted to heroin, and I've been clean for 11 years now, and that was a big part of me, like writing songs to begin with. It was a very big coping mechanism and kind of my therapy. And then, you know, years later, I started to finally get a grip on my mental health and get some stuff with that. So that's kind of what was going on when I was writing these songs. And I feel like the first record was more kind of just identifying the problems and letting, and like saying, you know, like hopefully letting people know that they're not alone. But this one was kind of more about like finding those little kind of, not necessarily fixes, but those little solutions, those little things in life that like make up for all the crappy stuff, you know what I mean? That was kind of like going into the idea I had. And then I thought of the symbolism of like a home remedy with, you know, so many people not being able to get healthcare and the internet being readily available. So many people like self-diagnose and try to find certain home remedies to take care of this or that. And I just thought that was really interesting and kind of like a symbol, because we find so many different ways to cope.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I saw that, you know, Home Remedy was kind of one of the last songs written for the album, and kind of, I really like the way it kind of ties up a lot of the themes on the album. And, you know, it also calls back to some of the previous Sundress stuff. Could you tell me a little bit about that one came together?
Yeah. It was actually the last song I wrote for the album. And it was a few weeks before recording, and we didn't really have a name for the album, but I knew there was kind of a theme behind it. And like, so I just kind of had in the back of my head that I needed to write a song that kind of like wrapped everything up. And it's really hard for me to just sit down and do that, but when it's meant to happen, it does. And yeah, I was just sitting in my apartment, and I came up with like that, the first line, which I thought was like a little cheesy, but like so like kind of funny, but also real and sentimental. And it just felt like us, you know. And so it really just started with that line, and I already had referenced like Home Remedies and other songs, so it's easy to kind of call back to that. And I started actually thinking about it as being the first track, and I've always loved when artists call back to their previous work. Like I'm a huge Bright Eyes fan, and in the, I guess that a Bright Eyes record just came out, but the one before that, he like reference all of his, basically describe the album art of each previous record in one line. And it just like, I just love little trinkets like that. I'm a huge music fan, obviously, that's why I do it. So so yeah, I was very happy that it came together. It kind of made it feel like all the delays in making recording happen and stuff were for a reason, so I could write that song.
You mentioned Bright Eyes, and I've seen you say before how you kind of, you feel like you learned more about like your writing style from like singer songwriters than, you know, like more like punk bands, similar to what Sundress is, especially like with your focus on lyrics and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about that influence and like how how your writing process has developed?
Yeah, definitely. I guess when I first started writing, I was just really into it. I didn't really start playing guitar until I was like around 20 years old, and I got sober when I was 22, and that's when I really started writing. But I was really into Bright Eyes when I heard him when I was 17, I think, and it was just like, it was such a new genre to me in the sense that, like, I was feeling what he was saying so hard, and I always loved writing lyrics, but I never thought I could be a good singer. And, like, early Bright Eyes stuff, he is not conventionally a good singer at all. So that was, it was kind of like, it kind of gave me this realization that you don't have to be like an amazing singer, you just have to have something to say. So I was just really into Bright Eyes and Elliot Smith, Pedro the Lion, David Bazan, Margot and the Nuclear So-and-So, stuff like that when I was learning how to write songs. So I really kind of learned from more of a folk format. And but I also grew up loving Saves the Day, New Found Glory, All Time Low, all those bands. So when it started to become a full band, I was just kind of, as far as a full band goes, I guess I was more influenced by that sound, and I was kind of inspired to try to kind of keep this initial songwriting, but kind of let my friends who are great at music turn it into Sundress songs, basically.
Yeah, I mean, has that been kind of like challenging balancing those two sides of things?
Not really, no. I feel like I've just kind of naturally, I definitely got way back into this music, like with the surge of like the emo revival and stuff like that, and so many new bands coming out. So I feel like it's a lot of what I've been listening to, and it's always kind of naturally come out how it does based on, you know, who I've had play with me over the years, and it now being more of like a full band effort in the studio, it's pretty natural where I just kind of write an acoustic song and I send it over to our guitar player AJ, who's just this amazing instrumentalist, and he'll kind of build out like a full band demo, so then we can all start working on it from there, which it's a really cool experience.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I've seen you kind of talk about how this was kind of the most collaborative release for the band so far. How has that kind of, how did that process kind of change for you, and how did it kind of come together for you?
So like kind of when I first started the band, you know, I had a lot of the same members for a long time, but it was very much like my songwriting project, and I kind of had people play with me. And then when we started touring, I started to kind of, lots of people come and go when you start touring because it's hard and you're broke and all that fun stuff, you know. But over the course of touring our first record, we kind of just solidified a lineup, and I basically ended up just surrounding myself with musicians that I'm fans of, and I get to play with them. So it was pretty natural to want to have their creative input on the record. And so when it came time, we ended up like shopping around for producers a little bit, and we met Mike Pepe, who ended up doing the record, and he pretty much became another bandmate. He's just incredible dude, and it was just the perfect fit for kind of the new sound and like a new, so many new creative minds on the project. So yeah, it definitely feels like the most Sundressed record we've ever made, but it kind of had to get to this point for us to figure out what Sundressed was.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Like, I feel like, I like literally in my notes I have, you know, this is in some ways like a more concise sound that feels like what you've been working towards all along. What was kind of like the mindset going into that, like towards the new sound? How did it kind of develop? And was there any sort of like anxiety around kind of like bringing forth this new era of the band that was kind of, you know, you've said this is kind of the most honest and authentic record yet?
Yeah, definitely. So how do I put this? So the first producer I worked with, who I learned so much from, he definitely had more of like a polished pop sound, which I personally enjoy. But it started to feel like as we got older that super polished sound didn't quite fit with like the songs that I was writing. And it was almost like a lyric that really matter to me might go over someone's head just because it's just like buried in a bunch of harmonies and autotune and it sounds perfect. You know what I mean? So a big thing going in was that we did have a little bit of like, you know, we'd occasionally have people tell me like, I wish your record sounded more like you guys do live, because we have a super energetic live show. And it, you know, when you listen to some of our old stuff, it's hard to picture like crowd surfing and stage diving to the music. But, you know, in the small venues and basements we were playing, so we kind of wanted a little bit more of a raw sound, but we didn't want to sacrifice quality, which is a very tough thing to kind of wrangle, because we didn't want it to all of a sudden be like, oh my God, there's like no tuning on his voice and he sings like shit. You know what I mean? But it did, the goal was to make it sound more honest. And I really think we did that. And I think we were a lot more creative with guitars than we have been in the past, which was really, I have to give all the credit to AJ on that one. He's just an incredible musician. So it was cool to let him just kind of like, here's my words and my melodies and like go to town on this, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen you reference the song The Facts being kind of like the most ambitious song, Sundress song so far musically. What is it about that one that kind of like, you know, got you excited?
So the way that one happened, that was pretty much the one where like I guess one thing was that AJ is kind of like, he's kind of a math rock guy. Like he plays bass in the band Weatherbox, which is one of our favorite bands. And this was the one where we were kind of just like, you can like really be yourself on this one. You know what I mean? And I had originally written the song in like a simple kind of 3-4 pattern, and he ended up transposing the first half of each verse to be in 5-4 time, which was like, we've never done any kind of weird tempo or anything like that. So that was incredibly hard for me just to figure out how to, he's like, your melody fits over it. You just have to like start on this offbeat. And like, my brain doesn't understand that kind of stuff very well. So it was a lot of trial and error just to like record it correctly. And then the bridge actually has a key change in it, which is another very ballsy thing for a emo band to try to do and pull it off successfully and make it feel like it's not forced. And it just kind of happened like with just messing around when I was writing it. So yeah, between the time signatures and the key change and all that, it was just definitely the wildest thing we had ever done.
Nice. Yeah. Did you end up getting like the hang of it? Like, is it going to end up being like a live song, or will it be kind of an album track?
Yeah, I definitely, it's just one of those ones that I just had to just listen to it a bunch to get it. Cause, they always say that like our drummer Vic says I'm like the heart of the project and AJ is like the brains, because I'm like kind of just like vomit over acoustic guitar arrangements and then AJ tightens it up for me. So yeah, it's something more that like I just have to listen to it a bunch of times instead of him telling me to start on this specific beat. You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah, it's funny. I remember Dan Campbell from the Wonder Years. He's mentioned before how he has like a really hard time with rhythm, which is always so interesting to me because like their drummer is like one of my favorite drummers of all time, and like he does some really cool stuff, and it's just like, it's interesting to me how those pieces like don't necessarily always fit together.
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, I kind of wanted to hear a little bit about the relationship with Rude Records and, you know, how it kind of started and what's it been like, you know, working with a European label as a US band.
Yeah, that's a great question. Hooking up with them was fairly random. It was just, we finally had the masters of the record and we had been talking to a few labels, but nothing concrete. We were getting a lot of like maybe kind of emails, you know, and we had toured with this band called Sunsleeper last year and become good friends with them. And I reached out to Jeff, their singer, to ask like how, cause they had put a record out on Rude, and he just had nothing but good things to say. And I don't remember if he just gave me the contact or if he sent our record over, but somehow they got the record and they quickly wrote back and loved it. And we started talking from there and it ended up just being really smooth. I was kind of worried about, you know, 'cause obviously they kill it in Europe, but, you know, they're not here. And like, I'm like, what is it going to be like trying to set up phone calls with a label that's like 12 hours ahead of you, you know? And like, but they have just been nothing but like on their shit, supportive, like listening to our ideas. And it's just, honestly, it just feels like we finally have a home. Like we're going to be doing a couple records with them in the contract, which is the first time we've done that. And yeah, I'm just blown away by the reach that they have gotten us. By, you know, we've never really had any kind of PR overseas, and they've got us like in rotation in Australia and the UK and Europe and all this stuff. And it's wild. Like it's definitely, they say that you want to sign with a label that can do more than you can do for yourself. And this is definitely our biggest experience with that for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, it's probably a good thing that you're getting, you know, building up that fan base in places that are dealing with COVID a little bit better than we are here too.
Our manager is saying we're probably like, chances are we'll play in the UK before we play here again. Like, I'm just happy to play anywhere. Like, put me on a stage somewhere, please.
For sure. Yeah, I feel that. And I mean, I know you guys have a full band live stream coming up as well. What are your feelings on that? How are you, how did that kind of come together?
I'm excited about it. It was kind of like we were going to build up with the Twitch streams we had been doing, and this would be the big like release show one. And we were actually going to do it a couple weeks ago and AJ fractured his wrist trying to skateboard. So we had to postpone it a little bit. But yeah, we're going to be doing full band, and we have like a couple little skits planned. And
I was like, how can we make this as much of an actual show as possible? And one idea was, I thought we could do like a merch drop that night and then give a code to everyone who's, you know, just verbally say the code on Twitch. So it's almost like people are going to the show and then going to the merch table after, except all from their living room.
For sure. Yeah. That's actually, I haven't seen any bands do that. I don't think I like that idea.
Thanks. Yeah. And we also are going to have, we got our own vinyl variant, like 100 copies that from the label that we would normally sell on tour. But since we can't do that, we're going to be putting those in our store as well. And we're going to assign all of them.
How are you feeling about, you know, playing these songs live finally?
I'm definitely super excited. Definitely nervous to do the facts. But we've been practicing as much as we can. And it'll be cool because we're renting out like our home venue here in Phoenix, where we probably would have done a release show. And so it's cool that we'll get to support them a little bit and, you know, kind of get to hopefully safely have a little celebration for this record that we worked so hard on. So I'm excited just to get to sing loud, even if it's, you know, over stream.
For sure. Yeah, and I mean, one of my favorite songs on the album is Your Frequency, kind of, you know, about the side gig and the grinding mentality and, you know, the kind of toll that it sometimes takes on your personal lives. And I'm curious to hear a little bit about that song, and also whether, you know, has this year been an opportunity for you to kind of like slow things down, or has it kind of had more of the opposite effect?
That's a good question. So Your Frequency kind of came about, I was trying to write something. I wanted more upbeat songs. And at the time I was working two jobs, and it was just, I was so miserable doing it. Like I was working at a hotel and I was cleaning pools, and then I actually three jobs, 'cause I had like a little internet customer service thing I would do. And it just like realized how difficult it was to like find time to just like enjoy life and stuff like that. And yeah, it just kind of came together pretty quick when I started just like imagining my, like what I go through every day. And it was just kind of like listing that. And it was a really fun one. It was actually originally that was one of the ones that we had to like rein AJ back on the riffs a little bit, because it was just getting like getting a little too much, to like the point where it's like, hey, this is like, it's still a pop song, you know, like let's focus on the chorus. But yeah, it's ended up being one of the most fun ones. We've been having fun playing that one at practice. I think it'll be a really fun one for the upcoming tours whenever they happen. Oh, and then as far as being busy, so I took this job cleaning pools like last winter, and I figured by summer I'd be on tour all the time, and that's when it gets hard. But obviously this summer didn't happen that way, so I ended up taking on the pool job full time, and it has been like the most physically demanding job I've ever had. So I've been absolutely exhausted between that and like definitely took a lot of extra work to get this album out and do the videos, because we ended up having to do a lot of like kind of DIY, get really creative to make cool videos, just because we couldn't go out and, you know, shoot the crowd videos, or, you know, we had to think of ways to make videos with no people, which is how the Your Frequency video came up. I was like, how can we make it like funny and about being busy without it, like without having any people in it? I was like, oh, we just like make it like a show on tour that in a city we've never played on. We just make it where no one shows up to the show.
A little too real, a little too real.
I know. I was pretty happy with that one.
Nice. Yeah, and I mean, you've mentioned a couple times how there's been kind of like some obstacles in the way of like, you know, getting the album together, getting it ready, and finally getting it out. You know, do you have any kind of like advice or tips for some of the bands that are kind of going through some similar stuff?
Yeah, definitely. I'd always say like, don't take the easy way, especially with recordings. Like, this is something that you're going to have for the rest of your life. And like, it might be cheaper to record it with so-and-so. And I don't knock home recordings at all. Like, I think some people are great at it, but if you aren't, take the time, because it's always worth it. Like, there were definitely times that we could have made this record for cheaper or with someone else. But when you know you're with the right producer, I'd say just go for it. And I've always thought that if you have good songs, like it'll eventually work out if you really love what you do. So yeah, in the whole, like, we ended up having to finance the whole record ourselves with some help from fans, but basically we had a label that was going to fund it, and then the label ended up kind of falling apart, and we had already met these Mike and knew we had to make it with him, but we basically had to spend a year touring and saving money so we could make it. So if you feel strongly about something with your art, just make it work.
You mentioned how, you know, Mike kind of ended up being like an extra member of the band. I'm curious, can you tell me a little bit more about that relationship, and also, you know, how you went about finding him?
Yeah, so we met him because our label and management at the time sent us to LA to meet. Like, we spent like a week meeting different producers, and we ended up just like kind of demoing out a song with him, and just, we had all just never felt so at ease, and he seemed to just really, really understand. He had actually reached out about us because he had caught us randomly at a house show in LA the year before. So he wanted to make the record already, which was a cool feeling. And then over the year or so of trying to figure out how to pay for it, I was probably on the phone with him once a week at least. And we just became really good friends. And we were sending all our demos over to him. So he was kind of already involved in the record well before we actually made it. So we just got really close with him. And he ended up, over that time, moving into Barefoot Studios in Hollywood, which is just this absolutely legendary room. Like, they made like Taking Back Sunday, Louder Now there, No Doubt, Tragic Kingdom, this first Third Eye Blind record, all these like insane hit records. So just like over the, just the fact that he ended up moving in there later on, and we didn't end up getting to record with him until after he had moved in, was just kind of like an extra cool thing that we got to record at his new spot, not his old spot, you know. But yeah, it kind of felt like everything was, how do I put this? I guess just having Mike through that process of figuring out, like, how the hell are we going to pay for a record was so nice to have. And it kind of felt like he was, like, fighting for it with us. I know some people say, well, if you loved it so much, why didn't you do it for free? But it's, you know, renting space at a studio like that is not cheap, and he has great credits, and his time is worth money. So, you know, it's his job. But yeah, so like I guess, yeah, between him and Rude, it just kind of feels like we're kind of like, we have these extensions of the band now that are going to be around. Like, I definitely see us going back to him for the next record.
Well, it's awesome to hear, for sure. Yeah, and I mean, I always kind of like to wrap up the same way, which is by asking for, you know, something you've been thinking about, a piece of advice, you know, kind of whatever you kind of want to get out of your mind, out of your chest that you think might, you know, help someone listening, whether it's about music or life in general, or just kind of whatever you're feeling.
I mean, I guess what I've really been trying to focus on is kind of what a lot of the record is about, is just like really just taking in those moments that like make everything worth living. And it's really hard right now because, you know, so many people, I'm sure, that listen to our band as well as people that make music in our scene, just being in that, being around live music is such a freeing thing for so many people, and we don't have it right now. But it's just as important to just continue to reach out and connect with people in other ways, because being alone in your house and not talking to anyone, at least for me, does not work. And I've definitely found myself really depressed a lot of the time. But looking back, like, there are some good things about this fucked up year.
And that was my conversation with Sundressed. Home Remedy is such a well-written and produced album, so please give it a spin when you have the chance. They're one of the bands whose name I've seen around for years, but never really checked out for whatever reason. So it's been really cool to connect to this record and explore their back catalog. Be sure to show Sundressed some love in whatever way you can, because that's something every band could use right now. Flying the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. A special thank you, as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyOnTheCallPod@gmail.com. I dropped my ballot off this weekend. If you're eligible, please be sure to stay informed and get out and vote. Make a habit of it. Don't just do it once every 4 years. You can make a difference.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.